Hello, dreamers, world builders, authors of action, and visionaries. I am Brooke Warner, and I'm here with my co-host, Grant Faulkner, who definitely takes creative risks in his work. So it's perfect that we have him here to weigh in on the subject of this week's theme of creative risk-taking. And NaNoWriMo is right around the corner, and so we are going to be talking about questions of risk, because one of the things that can help you get into the NaNoWriMo mentality is to ask yourself, you know, are you ready to risk? Are you ready to just fling some words onto that page and have some fun, but also take some risks with your writing? So Grant, I want to start out with a question about how to take risks with your writing or with your writing process, and maybe gear that out toward, you know, what you tell people who are interested in doing NaNoWriMo.
Yeah, I think I need an hour to answer this question, or perhaps I really need to write a book about it. I mean, seriously, I think the act of writing any story carries with it a certain risk, because you're putting pen to page and confronting yourself in so many ways. Can you find the words for your story? Do you trust that your story matters? Are you facing any fears, whether they're fears you're writing about on the page or fears of how others will perceive you? Will you have the endurance to write the whole stories? And will you be brave enough to open up and be vulnerable on the page and brave enough to take creative risks to write the story you want to, not someone else's story? So I could go on and on with these questions, which are worth asking yourself as a writer. But I think what's important to remember is that we have to take risks to grow as people and as writers, and we'll never get what we want unless we take risks. I mean, you hear it all the time, but people on their deathbeds always say they don't wish they'd worked longer hours in their jobs or kept a cleaner house. They wish they would have spoken up more and been themselves and told their stories, which always carries a risk. And so I think there's something in that, though, with NaNoWriMo, that we say, you know, don't wait until someday to write your story, but to write it now and to put that kind of pressure on yourself and to write it imperfectly, banish your inner editor and just jump in and write 50,000 words in 30 days. And so I think that kind of framework itself encourages risk-taking, because to keep your novel moving forward, to reach 50,000 words, you have to be taking risks all the time. And I think it helps nurture a mindset of accepting risk, really, of just like accepting it as part of the process and not thinking about it too much. Because I think that's what happens with risk, is we overthink it and then it becomes an inhibitor.
I love that, Grant. And you're making me want to do NaNoWriMo right now. And I know we have a month to go. So thank you for moving the gears of my mind toward a little bit more of a risk-taking mentality this year. And so now let me flip the question to personal risk-taking, basically the same question, but to do with your own writing. What is good about taking risks with your writing? And where do you feel that you take the most risks, with your fiction, your nonfiction, or with your process, or with everything?
Yeah, thanks for asking this, because I've been thinking a lot about this lately. And I have this saying that I think what matters most in a story isn't necessarily craft. And so that means like writing a good plot or well-written dialogue or lyrical prose or creating an interesting story world. Those things are all enjoyable in themselves and very valuable to a good story. But I think in the end, the stories that resonate the most with us, the ones we carry with us throughout our lives, are the ones where the writer made himself or herself vulnerable on the page. We read to connect to another's heart, in other words. So it's important for writers to practice that kind of risk-taking, to connect with readers and to also engage deeply with the story ourselves and to keep writing fresh. So I'm not necessarily talking about confessing your truths or your dark secrets directly, but to push the boundaries of what you're willing to open yourself up to. If you're afraid of that, I recently read a joke that if we all sat in a room and confessed our secret desires to each other, it would become boring because we all share basically the same secret desires. So there's probably nothing to be ashamed of, you know? So I have been thinking about this personally, because I think I've been telling stories in a certain vein and telling a certain type of stories actually for a while. And, you know, those stories, I could trace back influences from 10 or even 20 years ago that have informed them. And so I've been really thinking about how I'd like to shake up or entirely change the way I approach a story. And I've been experimenting a bit with this as I get ready for NaNoWriMo. And I've been reading the short story collection Verge, which is by Lydia Yuknovich, who we had on Right Minded. And I'm finding a real kinship with her stories. She's just so deeply and utterly honest on the page. stage that I think it takes many lifetimes to get to that place as a writer. And that's what's riveting about her stories. You're never quite sure where she's going to take you because honesty, her honesty can hold such surprises. So that's it for me, trying to find out how to take the risk to be more honest, to be less guarded in all writing. And that's easier said than done. I think of Hemingway's basic advice to writers where he said, just sit down and write one true thing. You know, that sounds so simple, but it's not.
Yeah, it reminds me of a book that Mark Nepo wrote. Mark Nepo, who is a friend of mine and who we had on the show early on. He wrote many books, but this one is called The Exquisite Risk. And the premise of that book has to do with living an authentic life. And the exquisite risk that he's talking about is this seemingly simple act to just be who you are, to hold nothing back, and to give everything that is in you, basically just to do the best you can at whatever you do. And so that too is, again, seemingly simple, but it's actually not. And writers know that very well, because writers do hold a lot of themselves back when they write, or they put themselves out there all the way and then they get metaphorically slapped, or maybe it's a negative review or someone not believing their truth or someone telling them that they don't have the right to tell their story. So risks abound when it comes to our writing. And in that, you know, we risk so many different facets of telling our story, just the writing itself. There's the exposure, there's the opening yourself up to readers, and, you know, just the very endeavor to do it in the first place. You know, it is risky and it's powerful and it's worth it.
This makes me think of one of my favorite writing quotes, which comes from James Baldwin, who wrote, "All art is a kind of confession, more or less oblique. All artists, if they are to survive, are forced at last to tell the story, to vomit the anguish up." And I think it's interesting that he puts this honesty in terms of survival, and that something forces artists to tell that whole story. And I don't think he's talking about an external force, but an internal force. So we all have to listen to that. And I also want to just read a couple sentences that really gave me pause in Lydia Yuknovich's story, Streetwalker. And this is a story where she has her narrator who lives in a neighborhood that is gentrifying. So it contains a lot of the homelessness and drug addicts from his past. But her narrator tells the story through various encounters with middle-class neighbors and the addicts she encounters. And she writes, "We can posture as a nation of shock all we want. It's still a story we know. Somebody wants something more than their own life. Somebody else is terrified by all they want." And I, when I read this, I just paused because I think these lines sum up creative risk-taking, you know, writing about that wanting of something more that binds us and then the fear of wanting more that comes with it.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to talk to Rebecca Roanhorse on this topic because she's known for being a creative risk taker, and we're going to ask her about that. And she's taken other risks too, the risk to tell stories that center non-white characters and non-European worlds, and this has gained her both praise and pushback. Part of being a risk taker is being a boundary pusher, and this can be exciting for writers because it drives writers, authors, and readers alike to new frontiers, but it can also be wrought with problems because it can push up against people's discomfort and it can make writers and their stories lightning rods. At the end of the day, I have to say I really admire Rebecca because I have a sense from everything that I've read about her that she's incredibly purpose-driven. And her work really comes from a deep well inside of her that wants to give voice to people who look like her or, you know, who don't look like the sort of average protagonists that we see in fantasy stories, which are primarily beautiful white people. And we've had other writers of color on the show who've spoken to how important this is. Danielle Jose Older and Nick Stone and others have talked about representation on two fronts, you know, on the author front, which is seeing writers of color succeed so that the career choice doesn't feel like something that's not possible for them, which is obviously important. And then seeing characters who are not just marginalized sidekicks, you know, who don't get any action or who die so early on in the story that they're just caricatures. And I we're going to ask Rebecca about this. I see that she's doing it. And I have a real felt sense that that's core to what she's trying to do in the world.
Yeah, Brooke, I think this interview will inspire listeners to get into that risk-taking frame of mind and to remember that it's actually a lot of fun to take risks when not too much is at stake, when you're just throwing down as many words as you can for months to see what you have at the end. Because we should remind people that Rebecca actually is a NaNoWriMo writer as well.
Yeah, I love that. So we'll for sure ask her about that. And that kind of risk is like a contained risk, you know, when you're doing it for a month and just getting as many words out on the page and it's just a draft, you know, until you can finesse it to the appropriate publishable risk down the road.
That's right. So folks, you do not want to risk missing this interview with Rebecca. We've got her all queued up for you right after this short, lovely musical interlude that I often listen to in my car and before going to bed at night.
So Grant, regular listeners know that we love using the Great Courses Plus because Great Courses ad copy says it keeps us learning about the world, but really it's because it makes us look smart and impressive. That's what I think anyway. So what is the most smart and impressive thing you have learned from a Great Courses Plus class recently?
Yeah, I love this as a motivation just to look smart and impressive. but I'm happy to say that one of the benefits of the pandemic, my pandemic lifestyle at least, has been indulging in great courses. So here are a few moments that made me look and feel smart. I actually listened to the course that analyzed the Bible a while back, and I was able to explain the story of Abraham to a friend when we were talking about the extremities of faith. I recently got to tell my son about the history behind the novel Frankenstein, how Mary Shelley wrote it as part of a competition one night with her future husband, Percy Shelley and Lord Byron, you know, so a pretty good storytelling crowd. And then on that note, I've recently been listening to a super cool course, How Science Shapes Science Fiction, because I love this kind of intersection of science and story.
Geez. And just from that little sampling, people can tell there are so many courses to discover. And it reminds me of my college days when I would excitedly look through the catalog of available classes and consider what my next weeks and months might look like. And the only problem with the Great Courses Plus, honestly, is that there is not enough time to take all the classes that I'm interested in, not even in a pandemic. So right now I am still watching those communism versus socialism classes. But I put in my queue a class called How to Grow Anything, Food Gardening for Everyone, because I am very interested in doing more gardening from home because I'm home more and because I think it would be something that would be fun for my son and I to do.
Yeah. And you will learn what you're supposed to be doing because the experts who teach these classes are top notch in their subject matter or field. And you can watch or listen from any device, which means you could watch it outside while gardening. And I can catch a lecture while I'm cooking dinner. And I even sometimes just listen to great courses without watching while I'm walking around my neighborhood with my dog Buster.
Yeah. And it's the perfect service for listeners of Right Minded, because I know our listeners are curious and they're lifelong learners. So all of you out there, do not wait. Now is the perfect time to sign up. Start exploring with your free month trial today. And you just go to our special URL. So Grant, it's your time to roll out the special URL this time.
I kept waiting you for to sing this in verse, but I wish I could, but I'm not going to. I'll take the Great Courses singing course and maybe do it later. But the URL is thegreatcoursesplus.com/rightminded. Rightminded, all one word, no hyphen. So remember, that's thegreatcoursesplus.com/rightminded. Check it out.
Welcome back, everybody. We have Rebecca Roanhorse with us today, a New York Times bestselling and Nebula, Hugo, and Locus Award-winning author of speculative fiction. Her first two novels, Trail of Lightning and Storm of Locusts, which are book 1 and 2 in the Sixth World series, are multiple award-winning books. Her novel, Resistance Reborn, is part of Star Wars Journey to the Rise of Skywalker and a USA Today and New York Times bestseller. And she also has a middle grade novel, Race to the Sun, another New York Times bestseller. And her newest novel, the first in a new series, is Black Sun and comes out later this month. Rebecca, welcome. So happy to have you with us. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So I'd love to start with a question about your prolificness. I know you have you have a new book coming out this month, which is the first in a new series, two previous books in the Sixth World series, Resistance Reborn, which is your Star Wars book, and then the middle grade novel Race to the Sun. All of these books have come out in less than 5 years, from what I can tell. So I'd like to ask you about your creativity. Where do these stories spring from? And what does it look like and feel like to write so voraciously?
Yeah, well, so actually, my first book came out in 2018. So these books have come out in like basically 2 years. So what does it feel like? It feels like panic. No, it feels, gosh, I don't know, good. But I'm definitely driven. I came to writing a little late. I had a couple of full careers before I became a full-time writer. And so I feel like I had a lot of stories stored up in me. I had a lot of things I wanted to say and the stories I wanted to tell, and they had never quite made it to the page. So with, sort of the publishing of Trail of Lightning, or even the short story that came slightly before that, the floodgates sort of opened on my imagination. And when the opportunities came, because opportunities can be rare in publishing, I took them. And so that's what I guess being prolific feels like. It feels a little bit like desperation, and a little bit like overdue time has come excitement.
Hey, Rebecca, since you mentioned that you came to writing late, I'm just curious because I know you've done NaNoWriMo. And since NaNoWriMo is around the corner, I'm just curious if you can tell us a little bit about your writing journey and the role that NaNoWriMo perhaps played in it. I'm curious if that NaNoWriMo has played a role in your ongoing process.
I've been writing all my life, sort of just writing for myself. I think I wrote my first short story in like 7th grade. So this is always sort of a hobby I've had. I'm also a prolific reader, so I was often, just sort of, I guess I sort of came of age before fan fiction was really a thing. But I would imagine if I had been the right age, that I would have been writing fan fiction. But I was just writing my own stuff instead. And then I guess, geez, around 2013, I decided to get a little more serious about writing. And so I had been sort of messing around with an idea and had made notes and things like that about a story I wanted to write. But I didn't really have a lot of discipline about working on it because I was working a full-time job as an attorney. I had a small child, and so not a lot of free time. So I saw something about NaNoWriMo. I can't even remember how it came into my consciousness now. But I saw that they were meeting. There was a local group, and they were going to meet twice a week on Wednesdays and Saturdays through the month of November and write together. And I thought, wow, well, so this is my chance to try to get some discipline into some structure, I guess, into my schedule. I would be, beholden to these people to show up and feel obligated to be there and working. And so that's what I did. And I did not write my novel in a month, but I made substantial progress. And more importantly, I found a community. I made friends, other writers, and they weren't necessarily, I write, science fiction and fantasy. They weren't science fiction and fantasy writers per se. I think one was a romance writer, one was like a self-help writer, but they were all sitting down and they were all doing the work. And then, they were there to exchange manuscripts and critique and give feedback, but mostly just to support, butt in chair, getting work done. And so I think that's really what Nano gave me that I was so grateful for. I don't know that I would have ever finished my first novel if I hadn't had this group of other writers to support me for that first year. And then, now my whole life is NaNoWriMo. Now I'm on deadlines. So I don't get to, I'm like, oh, 50K in a month or something sounds pretty leisurely. No, not really. That's insane. But I'm constantly writing at a pace of like, at least, 2,000 words a day or something, because now it's my job, it's required. But it certainly sort of taught me to get into that frame of mind.
That is pretty incredible output and inspiring. This episode today, we're talking about creative risks, and it strikes me that you've taken a lot of risks professionally, creatively, and in the interviews I've read about you, risk came up a lot. And I'm curious to the degree to which taking risks drives you, and whether, like, is it the kind of thing where you say, I'm going to take a huge risk with this story or this novel, or is it the case that because you write outside of white mainstream stories that the publishing world is crediting you with being this big risk taker, or is it some kind of combination or swirly mix of that?
I make sort of, well, I think I make a conscious decision to take a risk often. for better or for worse. I don't know that I can write and not take a risk. There have definitely been times where I have come up against an idea or the kind of character I want to create, and I've thought, should I write that? People are going to get mad at me. People aren't going to like it. It might not sell, you know, that sort of thing. But that's what's speaking to me. That's the story I need to tell. That's what I want to do. And so I would much rather err on the side of risk and the consequences than to write something that's milquetoast or that's, you know, bland or that's safe. I don't think I could write safe if I tried. And wow, would it be nice sometimes to just write safe and, you know, write something and, oh, everybody loves it and all of that. But, you know, your story is your story. And it's the one that, you know, you're not to be, you know, I guess a little bit like cheesy, but it's the one your soul wants to tell. It's the story you know how to tell. And my life is not a milquetoast kind of life. My life is a sort of has been an edgy kind of life. And so that's what's going to come out on the page.
Well, thanks, Rebecca. I'd love to talk a little bit more about your participation in the NaNoWriMo group, because we have all sorts of groups. You know, some of them meet online, and then some of them meet through write-ins that are, you know, volunteers organized in the local community. And it seems like your group gave you empowerment. And I've read that empowerment, you know, not only led you to help you write, but also to publish. And so I was wondering, like, did the group help you with the kind of, you know, pushing your creativity and that kind of accountability and word count goals that are part of NaNoWriMo? Or was it something even bigger about, your identity as a writer, I guess?
Well, probably the first one, a little more than the second one. I think that I saw people who were, well, one of the women in the group was a professional romance writer, and she had a number of novels, you know, already published under her belt. But often she was the one telling me, you know, publishing is hard, you know, I don't know if you're going to get an agent, you know, this is really difficult. So she was actually a little bit more of like, you know, the naysayer in the group, ironically. But the other ones were sort of like more in a sort of self-published, and they were much sort of more encouraging that there is space for you out there. Someone will like, you know, your story. Someone will, well, it's good enough that, you know, someone will want to read it. There's something to be said for being realistic, you know, about publishing, because it is difficult. I came in through the slush. I didn't know anything about publishing. I was very naive, honestly, about what publishing is like and what being a writer is like. But with their encouragement, I did query an agent. I had done my research on an agent that I thought would be a good fit, but I just came in through the slush, and later I found out she receives about 30,000 queries a year, and she picks about five authors to represent, and I was one of the five. So, you know, I don't know how you sort of face those odds. Maybe it helps to be a little naive. It helps to, you know, not quite know like how daunting publishing can be.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Rebecca. And I'm going to loop back to the writing part of our conversation a bit, because we are rounding the corner towards NaNoWriMo, and a lot of people out there are getting ready to write their novels. And sometimes for a lot of people, it's their first novel. They've never written before. So it's they don't know how to do it. And they're looking for guidance. And, you know, sometimes the best way to learn is just to do it. But I think any kind of, you know, guidance or frame that you could provide would be really helpful. So I'm going to ask you two questions. One is one that I really love. It's to impart the worst advice you've ever heard, the worst writing advice, because I think we can learn from that. And then secondly, just what do you want to tell the thousands of writers getting ready to write during November? What will help make them successful?
I think the worst writing advice is this is the one and only way to do something. You have to do it my way, and this writing advice I'm giving you, or you will not be a success, or you will not, you know, finish your story, or whatever that is. There are as many ways to write as there are people. Like, everyone is different. You know, there's a few good rules, like, you know, find some discipline, you know, find a support group, that sort of thing, I think are universal truths. But if it's like, you know, no, don't use adverbs, or, you know, make sure your sentences are this way, or something, I think, you know, take that all with a grain of salt. Keep what works for you, throw out the rest. In general, I think that's a rule. And I guess that sort of segues into my advice is tell your story. Tell the story that only you can tell and that you have to tell. Don't try to write to the market. Don't try to write to what you think is working right now and popular. Remember, even if your book gets bought, it usually takes 18 months after it's been sold to make it to the shelf. So by then, whatever trend you're trying to write to might be over. So don't write a COVID book. That's a good idea.
No kidding.
Write what speaks to you, the story that you think only you can tell. And I think that that's how not only are you happy as an artist, but I think that that's what people want. They want to hear the story that only you can tell.
Can't ask for better advice than that. So thank you so much for those words to send off. And thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And congratulations on the new book. We hope that everybody will buy it. I also went and downloaded the audiobook of your the middle grade novel for my son. So thanks for everything you're doing.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. I hope you like it. And the new novel, I'm just going to plug the novel, is called Black Sun. It's an epic fantasy based on the pre-Columbian Indigenous Americas, and it comes out October 13th.
We will be right back with today's book talk. Brooke, I wanted to tell you about this little writing event that I'd like to tell people about because I think it might help them get inspired to do the heavy lifting on their writing projects. It's cool because it's produced hundreds of amazing books, including bestsellers, and thousands of people do it each year. And beyond realizing their creative dreams, many people just say it's a lot of fun. And it's free, which is cool.
It sounds like just the kind of event that many writers need, Grant. How can I find out more about it?
Well, you can go to nanowrimo.org. It's kind of a silly name, NaNoWriMo, which is an acronym for National Novel Writing Month, which happens every November. And the challenge is to write 50,000 words of a novel in a month. The idea is that a goal and a deadline as a creative midwife, and not to write your novel or memoir someday, but to do it today. Also, there's an amazing community of people who participate both online and in person. So it's like a rollicking party and a writing boot camp all at once.
And why the heck does it take place in November?
Because if you can write a novel during November, then you can write a novel anytime. Also, November is a dark and rainy month for many. So it's a good month to stay inside and write. And many people have leftover Halloween candy, which is known to fuel novel writing.
And you said memoirists can participate?
Yeah, a memoir is just a novel shelved in the nonfiction section by my definition. The main thing is to write, to banish your inner editor and focus on getting a first draft done because you can't edit a blank page.
That's amazing, Grant. I am going to sign up for this thing called NaNoWriMo.
It's not a newly discovered eel. It's not one of Jupiter's moons. It's not a mountain outside of Kathmandu. It's a novel writing event waiting for you at NaNoWriMo.org. Sign up now and start planning your novel.
So my book pick of the week is a Spark Press title called Eye of Zeus by Elaine Adams. Elaine is another prolific series writer, and before this debut novel about the Greek gods, she wrote a whole middle grade series about Nordic mythology, which was called The Legends of Orkney. And I thought about Elaine's book because I downloaded Rebecca's middle grade novel, Race to the Sun, for my son James, and we just started listening to it and we're excited to finish it. And Rebecca's book is very much otherworldly. You know, it's got these pre-Columbian notions much in line with the kinds of books that she's writing for adult readers. Eye of Zeus, on the other hand, is Greek mythology. You know, there's a reason why these European mythology series do so well, because those are cultures that we know. You know, they're very centered at the core of our curriculums and our cultural values. And there's a familiarity with it, which was the reason that Elaine actually went and wrote a Greek series to begin with, because it was a little bit harder to sell people on the idea of Nordic mythology. So anyway, I did love it. I think there's room for all kinds of cultures in these series, especially that we're reading with and for our middle grade readers. So I always appreciate a book that I can read to James and also enjoy for myself. So thank you to Elaine Adams for that.
Yeah, thanks, Brooke. And we will be back next week with more NaNoWriMo tips from successful authors. And just a reminder, Right Mind, it is a weekly podcast. You can find it anywhere on the internet where you can listen to podcasts. So please continue to tune in. And if you can give us a review, we deeply appreciate it. And we will send you novel writing karma. So thanks, and we'll see you next week.